This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Alexa, sing me an Aston Villa song.
Every week we follow the boys in claret and blue. We even conquered Europe in 1982. The Villa boys from Aston, we travel near and far. You can hear us singing from the stands at Villa Park.
When I go home late at night, this is a song that I really like to sing right now, so I'll play it for you. It's called My Old Man.
Feet makes the angle for the cross. They got it. Check that, he says again. But McGinn is not holding back his celebrations.
Welcome to the My Old Man Said podcast. I'm David Michael, the editor of myoldmansaid.com. Joining me on episode 87 of the greatest podcast in the world, Mr. Chris Bird, welcome.
Hello.
And Mr. Dan Rogers, back again.
Back for more.
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 More draws, more winless games.
Oh, I love it. It's truly is 2015 all over again.
Don't say things like that, because we would be looking at statistics and saying things like, we are only 1 point better off than we were after the first 7 games of that ill-fated 2015/16 season. So hopefully Villa can keep it together and transition into a decent middle-of-the-table team.
I mean, Wesley will morph into a really good version of Rüdiger Stead. I've got absolute faith.
I think it's the haircut, isn't it? It's probably the haircut will work.
Yeah, because I think
I love following this club, don't you?
Maybe Louise and him should have swapped haircuts. And
didn't Gestead, once he cut his dreads, didn't he turn into a half the man he was?
Yeah, he ended up in Middlesbrough.
Yeah, and how's that working out for him? Actually, if he just went off the radar, didn't he? Anyway, this is not the Rudy Gestead podcast. This is
not anymore. Anyway,
oh.
This is the My Old Man Said podcast, and coming up on the show, we will discuss Wesley, and I'm sure we'll be calling him several different names. We'll be discussing the 2-2 draw at home against Burnley, one of the trio of games that we thought we really should be taking 6-7 points from. Well, that's 1 point, so we've just got 6 to go. And
yes.
Also up on the show, we'll be discussing about how to get rid of a manager. This is nothing to do with Dean Smith. Before you start to get hot rashes and cold sweats, this is how you cash out on a manager once you just know he's not very good. Also, we see what truly happens, and we have a little bit of experience of this, that when you lose a playoff final. And we'll also find out about a new possible decision that maybe it's up to VAR to make. Oh, we'll have a Scott Hogan touch count. We've had it on ice for the last 2 weeks, but this time it's coming back because we need something to lift our spirits. And obviously, we will discuss every feature of that Burnley game. And We will discuss what Smith is doing right and what he's doing wrong, in our humble opinion. Before we go on to the 3 points, a quick shout out to our friend in Bahrain.
Bahrain.
Khalid Hamad, who was actually over in Brummyland for the Villa Burnley game. Big Villa supporter who lives in Bahrain most of the time. He got in touch regarding inviting us to some of those games that we've been highlighting in the 3 points over the last few weeks. And his suggestion, I think it was the Bahrain-Iran game, which is coming up, I think, in the first international break in October.
Been interesting away day for us.
Well, yeah, no, he offered to pay for the tickets and accommodation, so if anybody wants to offer up the flight, we'll be there.
I mean, I survived Blackpool on Saturday night, so...
Well, this might be a bit more tasty than Blackpool.
Be warmer.
Well, yeah, no, that's half the reason of going. But it is. I mean, I looked at the table, and it is the top of the table clash for that group at the moment. The group that also includes Cambodia, Hong Kong, and Iraq.
Pedigree.
And as Khalid said, I think the referee is going to need two decks of cards because it's going to be a bit feisty, considering the current political climate there. Right, let's get into these 3 points. Number one, I think I'll do this one. This is the week where we found out what happens when you lose a championship playoff final. Well, basically, you know, the gates of Hades opened up and you get swallowed up, as we found out 2 seasons ago when we lost against Fulham. We almost went into administration. I mean, our tragedy was more financial. Derby's, though, seems to have, I mean, they went out... as a group on a scheduled team-building dinner, or team-destroying, as it turned out. while, obviously, I think they were given the green light to have a few beers, and...
First mistake.
Yeah, don't open the portal. And, well, most of them left around 8 o'clock and weren't involved, a small group decided to take it on into the night, led by team captain Richard Keogh. And they decided to, have probably more than a few beers extra. And they had, I mean, you know, this we're talking about highly paid players who have cars laid on by the club, but they, you know, they shunned them away and decided to, basically crash their own vehicles, didn't they?
It defies logic and reason, this, but carry on.
I mean, it defies logic and reason, but it's standard footballer behaviour. It's kind of par for the course.
Well, I mean, we've kind of seen it down the line. But, you know, Richard Keogh suffered a serious knee injury, which is, I mean, he's obviously injured, but I think, you know, they've said he's out for the season. And since his contract runs out, it basically means he's out of the club. See you later. And he's never going to play again. And, you know, what's the details on the other players that have obviously been blacklisted or potentially blacklisted?
Is it Mason Bennett, was it? One of their sort of relatively promising young players, and Lawrence as well. And there's talk that they might be...
Which one was puking in the toilet?
Mason Bennett, I believe, the picture of him throwing up was of.
Puking into a men's urinal isn't the best image building, is it, for any young aspiring footballer?
Or young YouTuber. Shout out to Max Stakes, Wembley Stadium.
Ah, yes. He stooped lower than the Al Ghazi header. Not that Max saw that bit of the game, but
you sent us a WhatsApp of about 11 different pictures. What was there anything funny about that, Mr. Budd? Was there any highlights or standout?
The picture itself just looks horrible. The injury, just his knee just opened up. That's pretty horrible. Obviously, the both lads are going to lose their driving licenses. They may get. I wouldn't have thought they'll get jail time. They'll get community work. It's just the sort of the touch and go thing now. Be whether the club decide to just kick them out, you know, for ruining the club captain.
Didn't it all kick off because the club captain's card defaulted?
Yeah,
wasn't accepted.
Yeah, they had a. I think it was like about an £800 barber.
They had a recon group issued card, didn't they?
yeah, they couldn't pay the bar bill, let alone the tax on top.
Terrible, really.
And then apparently, Keogh decided he would lie about his name.
What did he say? I'm Nathan Baker.
Apparently, his name was Alfie.
What? Oh my god.
Rumours that they, as well as having obviously an alcohol test, they had a drugs test as well, and according to this WhatsApp group, tested positive for cocaine. But we'll see what happens there.
I wouldn't be surprised
because a lot of players do it, so and have done down, you know, over the years as well.
It does force you to bring that classic comparison that if you behaved in this way, there wouldn't even be any space for the debate around, you know, would you have a job tomorrow? Would you would there be any question? You wouldn't have any further, you know, further issues to answer for. And it's just this bizarre world that mega rich footballers seem to operate in, that they're not only do they behave in such a way they think they're above the law, that they almost have a room to maneuver, that there's, you know, they should just be sacked.
Yeah.
I mean, dare I say it, they almost know they almost are above the law, as sad as it sounds. They're like, well, I'm going to get away with it. What's the worst that can happen? I can just get a driver. I've wrecked a Range Rover.
They were offered drivers. That's the crazy thing. That multiple millionaire probably footballers, and they were offered free cars. And it's, you know, they were lucky not to kill themselves or others.
A lot of the time, these issues happen is because people around, like let's say famous people or rich people, are kind of sycophants and like yes people, and also they'll cover it up if they're getting their wages paid. I mean, you just look at what happened over, you know, at the BBC over the years. That let's say some of their more famous presenters and what happened to them. You know, these people are facilitated with their deviances. This is the problem. A lot of people haven't got principles to stand up to them because they fear they're going to lose their job. Anyway, let's move on to point number two, Mr. Dan Rogers.
So, need to cash out on a new manager? Check their betting slips. So this is the story of Wally Downs. Great name for any football manager, by the way. And then Wally Downs, AFC Wimbledon have suspended after a betting charge. So the Dons haven't won in their 11 games this season, and they're only propped up by Bolton, who, of course, were following their administration. They were docked 12 points at the beginning of the season. I think they're on -9 now. Wally Downs has been with Wimbledon since 2018. And he's now been charged by the FA in respect of 8 bets that he's placed on games between the end of 2013 up to the summer of July 2019.
I want to know what these bets are.
Yeah, it's quite random, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't say it's a gambling problem, is it? It's more of a, this has got to be an insider thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Well, Wally Downs is not a multimillionaire, and he's obviously trying to make a bit on the side, and that's where the insider trading comes in. It's when you need the money, because these people playing in the Premier League aren't going to risk their ginormous wages on some, they don't need any more money, so there's nothing in them to influence games. But at the lower level, that's where it kicks in, because people obviously can succumb to temptation. Anyway, point number three, Mr. Budge.
Another possible decision for VAR to make as ball boys go rogue. So we've seen managers and assistants and all number of people getting the red card treatment. But at Yeovil this weekend, we saw a new victim of the early bath, which was the ball boys. So at Hewish Park, 8 red cards were branded in the Yeovil Town versus Bromley game, which ended 3-1. Normally 8 sendings off is enough to have the game abandoned. Previously happened actually with, was it West Brom a few years ago?
Yeah, and Sheffield United, I think.
Yeah. So with 10 minutes to go, the referee, Aaron Jackson, warned a ball boy about delaying giving the ball back to a Bromley player, which is strange in itself. It must have been happening all game. And then the ball boy then repeated this trick for time wasting, and the referee decided to send him and all the ball boys off. One steward was tasked with the hilarious job of gathering up these naughty schoolboys and marching them off down the tunnel.
He got his pipe out and he did the Pied Piper of Hamelin.
Yeah, strolled them off down the tunnel. Which must have made for a fantastic phone call for the parents. Sorry, your son's in detention.
Well, they've obviously been set up by the club to do it, aren't they? The kids don't do it on their own free will.
Yeah, it's a tactical thing, isn't it? You know, and I'm sure it's part of the home advantage thing. You know, if you want to, when you've got the ball and you want a momentum, give me the ball straight back.
Yeah, you've got to do it a bit subtly or uniquely. I remember the old Villa ball boy who, it was against QPR, wasn't it? 2015, when the ball, he was behind the goal and he started doing keep me ups while he was lying down on his back. And then when Robert Green came up to him to get the ball, he just rolled it between his legs, didn't he? Just made.
I mean, in fairness, Rob Green, the ball does go through his legs quite a lot, so it's inconclusive.
So, I mean, he basically took the piss out of him. And then obviously the Swansea ball boy who was obviously time wasting against Chelsea in the League Cup semi-final, when Swansea actually beat Chelsea and set up a final against what were they called? Bradford City.
Oh God, you're reminding me. Oh God. Oh God, my Paul Lambert gland is going off. It's oozing Ashley Westwood into my veins. He should have been sacked that night.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it back, actually. But he was a little bastard, wasn't he? He was
17.
Smart-ass, wasn't he? And he feigned his injury.
And he winked as well. I remember him winking.
Yeah, he was
afterwards.
Doing a Wesley, holding onto his gut, you know, holding onto his ribs and crying.
I'm dead. I'm out cold. I love the fact that that story at Yeovil does end, though, that the fact that in stoppage time, the referee had to go and get his own ball because, of course, there were no ball boys to get him one.
Yes.
Fucked himself there, hasn't he?
Right, before we go on, please do make sure if you're listening on Apple or Spotify to subscribe. It just helps once you have a certain amount of subscribers, I'm sure. The inner equations or analytics helps spread it in system to other listeners or potential listeners, should I say. Also, I just want to give a quick shout out to the My Old Man Said patrons. Please do join up to be a My Old Man Said patron because then you will have access to bonus shows like the Anti-Preview, which is a new weekly irreverent kind of look at our opponents and a few memories and thoughts that they actually spring to our nasty, sordid minds.
It's mostly hate speech, I think, is how I think we might need to rebrand it.
It's the type of stuff that if it was on YouTube, we would be demonetized because of hate speech.
We call it group
therapy. That's why we're not on YouTube. And thank you very, very much to the new My Old Man Said patrons, Joe Peters, Jake, and Martin Ambler as well. And also, as I mentioned on the last show, 86.5, I've forgotten over the last few weeks to give shout-outs to the Facebook supporters, which is like another variation of the My Old Man Said patrons, who also get access to bonus podcasts and an exclusive content stream. So if it's easier for you to support the show that way, do sign up there. Although I do recommend the normal patrons a better option because it allows us to do more things for people who support us. But anyway, it might be a more suitable option for you. But anyway, shouts out to Damon Pritchard-Williams, James Massey, Jordan Crawley, Patrick Waldron, Martin Holmes, Jack Greenwood, and also Michael Smith. Thank you very much. And if you want to become a Facebook supporter, just go on the Facebook page. You'll see the button to be a supporter, and more details are there. Facebook / My Old Man Said. Right, Villa Burnley. This was one of the trio of games we highlighted, and you know, pretty much every Villa supporter highlighted as games that we needed to get points out. Although in this league, as I said, you've got to take your opportunities when they come for points. When you're a team in transition like we are and rebuilding, you can't say, oh, well, we'll get points here, there, and there. We're at the level where we can't select games where we're going to get points because we are a team that everybody else is looking at and saying we're going to get points off. So in terms of the selection, I mean, obviously Smith tried to change it up a bit. Target came in, as we did say on the show, was lightly. So Target came in, also Horahan came in, and it wasn't in for Nakamba, who continued over Douglas Luiz. And hey-ho, that's how we played. And first half seemed to be going swimmingly, didn't it?
Yeah, they came out of the traps, you know, quickly. It looked like you'd kind of just tweaked the system slightly. It looked more like a sort of like a 4-1-4-1 with a sort of a fluid four who would all kind of move around, which was, you know, for the first 45 minutes worked well. My big sort of take from the slight changes was the difference having Matt Target in the team makes in terms of you have that constant out ball because he will hug the touchline and bomb on. And then when he gets into the final third, he's got the ability to deliver, which we've said probably weekly on the podcast that it's not rocket science. If you can get to the byline and deliver a good ball, you're going to make chances. And that's where both goals came from.
People said when he came in, like if you were looking at the pros and cons of players, when you know when you're doing your analysis, people said, well, you know, he's not the fastest player in the world, and you know it's always a bonus to have speed. But for me, it's you also need the inclination, you need the determination, and to actually get forward and actually have a go, and you know, have the intent. And if you haven't got that, then you know it doesn't really matter. And he has that, and you know that's what's put him on the radar in the first place. As Chris said, he does change the dynamic and make us a bit more, let's say, potent, wider out.
I think it allows by having you know an Algarzi or a Trezeguet or whoever it's going to be on the right, even if it's just Gilbert, you can have two guys with you know hugging the touchlines, and all of a sudden the likes of McGinn and Grealish, to a certain extent, Hourihane, they just get that little bit more space in the middle of the park because they always have an out ball.
Mm.
And if they, you know, normally Taylor will get the ball on the touchline, generally from a Mings or Nakamba, and he'll always look to go back. Target will actually push past, so he gives Grealish an option to pass forwards rather than across and back, across and back. So that's, you know, it's you know we said numerous times in the show, even in pre-season, you know, we need to have more dynamic fullbacks for 45 minutes. You could see that, oh, actually, do you know what? There's a little glimmer that this might be the way this will work for Villa moving forward. I mean, I thought in terms of the personnel, it was about right. I wouldn't look at the squad and say, I'd change that for that. There didn't seem too many obvious changes in the team and formation.
As we said, at the start of the season, this was a potential way of improving Villa was obviously more dynamic fullbacks, because suddenly if you've got two running down the line, instead of, as you said, the fullback getting the ball and just passing it back because there's three or so players ahead of him, you've got him and the wide midfielder potentially able to scheme together to actually get a break down the line and obviously deliver in balls. There seems to be a gamely VAR decision that brings out conjecture amongst fans, and Villa fans actually at Villa Park were actually singing songs about VAR.
Yes, we were.
Not favourable ones. In this case, when you look at it, I mean, I thought he was offside anyway when he played the ball, and that's what the replay shows is offside. So it's not a goal in the strictest sense of the word. But the fact that I had time to tweet out, blah, 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 McGinn scores, blah, 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 blah. And it wasn't like tweeting it out straight away. A few seconds after the goal. In your mind, what was the time between, obviously we didn't have a stopwatch on it, but it seemed a long time.
A good couple of minutes.
It was. I mean, I'm about to say like a real modernism of, I suppose, the type of things that I do from the ground. But I had time to film the goal celebrations, trim the footage, and I was about to hit send on the fucking tweet. I was like, I'm just going to watch what goes on here. It was the duration where it was that longer period that I went and got a Villa dog. I deep throated it all the way down, and still the decision hadn't come. And that was the thing. That was the point. It was more the length of time that something that there was a hint of offside at the time. I wasn't sure from my vantage point on the halt end, but it took so long. And I mean, both sets of teams were in each other's heart, back in each other's opposing halves, weren't they? Before he marched them back.
The celebrations were kind of finished. The Villa players were walking back to the centre circle. The Burnley players had stormed off in a huff.
That's the issue with VAR. That is the issue.
And no one knew. Nobody knew that it was under review, did they?
This is what the referees will say, or the refereeing body. The linesman has been instructed that because they've got VAR, let it play out, see what happens, and then let's use VAR to make the decision. This is the problem. On that one, if he's like, I think that's offside, he'd raise his flag. But if he knows he's got VAR, then he's going to let it go. But then it's that decision. And once that ball's in the net, if he's let it go for VAR, VAR better fucking deliver an instant decision, because a lot of people saying it's killing the soul of football. We're celebrating goals and then having them taken away from us. That isn't really an issue, because that happens every time on offside goals, because most people aren't looking at the linesman, so they're celebrating. If I'm in the Trinity end, and when I've been in there and there's been an offside goal, normally I'm on the line of the linesman, so I see his flag straight away. So I'm there like cold as ice, still as a stone, where everybody, and you just see the whole tent erupt and you're just waiting for them to all go, fuck. It's offside. So there is that. That's happening anyway, but it's that delay. If you're celebrating and then you kind of carry on the celebration, you go into limbs territory, for want of a better term. That's when it takes the soul away.
Mike, I mean, we sort of used the comparisons with rugby, and I'd use the comparison this week with rugby and also with cricket. You look at how a caught behind or an LBW decision in cricket, it's because the players get timed out, don't they? If they want to put a referral
review,
so everyone in the ground knows, he's been given out. He's gone for a review, and everyone knows what's going on. The big thing for me in the ground was the timing was bad, but no one knows. At least when a goal's disallowed, the conventional way for offside, the flag goes up, everyone goes up, they look over and go, oh, fucking hell. And that's relatively instant. No one knew it was under review. It wasn't like the ball's gone in, the ref's blown up like in a rugby gun, and then, straight away, RK's referred it straight to the video, so everyone goes, oh, fucking hell, this might not be a goal.
The reason it doesn't flash up VAR flashing madly on the big screens, which it should do, really, when you think about it, is because they're scared of the crowd, and they've thought, we're doing this, and we'll do this on the sly, really, and it's going to backfire.
I think there's it makes it quite decisions. Toxic for me. That
it does.
Well, what it's doing is that I think VAR's got something to deliver in the game, and it's eroding any. It's eroding it, and what it's created, it's a very divisive thing. Where actually, VAR should be getting the key decisions right the vast majority of the times, where it's not subjective. But just to finish off on this point, because I think we can talk forever and a day, that the technology exists where they need to. The linesmen's and the referees still need to do their jobs, because if you call that in that phase of players offside, it was offside, and it would have been a marginal call, But I think to allow these phases of play to go on, I think it opens ambiguity of how far do you go back. I think that's a big argument. And I also think it opens into this debate of people going, well, instantly VAR would know if that was offside, you know, and I think that it's this clouding of the offside rules and those marginal rules in football that creates the debate around these things. I mean, ultimately for me, it's you know, to pick up on finally on the point of the toxicity, it really does turn me off football, you know, because it's a huge part of it for me that I'm not going to say you could allow for human error before, but that there was a legitimate reason for it happening. You know, an official wouldn't give a decision for the wrong reason. And now we've got the technology to correct that. Why aren't we applying it in the right way?
Referees, I mean, it's a difficult job in terms of the speed of the game and getting it right, et cetera, et cetera. But if you watch a game on TV, you know instantly, pretty much, unless it's a 50-50 and you need to watch a few replays, but you know pretty much instantly when somebody's offside or if, you know, goal's over the line, whatever, yep. Or if something's sending off a fence. Now, I would say somebody in the bloody VAR booth should have that same reaction, especially somebody who's fucking trained to, look at the game in that way.
Exactly.
So should the linesmen, I mean, surely they are already, be mic'd up, you know, give him a fucking electric shock if it's offside. Give him it so it's instantaneous. You know, give them the beep so they can pretty much, even if they're hesitating like a second, and the ball goes in the net, you know, they've got the flag up. And
well, I'm going to repeat what I said a couple of weeks ago. I think there's the if you were to invent football tomorrow, I think you get rid of the on-field officials. I think they're a spent force, and you just use the fantastic at the elite level of the game. You can use, you know, ultra HD footage, instantly make a decision, call it that way.
You need somebody on the pitch, I think. But I mean, like, for example, NFL has people on the pitch.
Well, even if that person's just relaying what the decision is of the eyes off the pitch, I don't know. It's a bigger debate for another time.
I mean, my sort of final point is I still don't get why, though, if they've got the technology and they're clearly using it, and they use it in other sports and it works brilliantly in rugby, just put it on the fucking screen.
Well, this is the thing.
And that there are certain decisions where you think, okay, if it's a really nasty tackle and everyone's missed it, they think it's a bad one, but they always look worse in slow-mo. But for something like an offside, you know, you're going to be frustrated. You think, oh, fucking hell, why are you offside? But if there's clear daylight, you're just going to go, well, all right, they've clearly made the right decision.
Mm.
I'm frustrated, but it's not going to incite violence.
To carry on my point about, it's a difficult job for referees, blah, blah, blah. They were given a golden egg, and that's finally, after much debate, the use of technology that would pretty much 100% determine if a decision is right or not. But as, you know, Chris has just alluded to there, they've decided, well, we don't want the fans to know about it. How are we going to execute this?
Bullshit.
And they've probably executed it in the worst way possible, because make it part of the game, and then it's immersive.
Yeah, but even if we don't see the video, just tell us about the referral. So, because then he can make an instant decision. The ball hits the back of the net, bang, VAR referral on the screen. The whole crowd goes up. And then they see it and go, oh, okay, this might not be a goal.
But this is classic football problem, though. That every other sports, I mean, you just mentioned a moment ago, you know, that other officials are mic'd up. You know, you've got fucking referees, like this stupid modern thing they do in the modern game where footballers cover their mouths when they're talking. We've got referees and managers doing it now. You know, what are they trying to hide? This is, you know, other, I think in the NFL and some American sports, they speak to the officials afterwards. What was their rationale for, you know what? Why
they're covering their mouth because Wesley's lying on the floor, and behind their hand they're saying he's not really dead. He's not really dead.
which serves to illustrate our point that everyone in the ground is thinking the same thing. And, you know, they might as well join in the conversation.
Ruling out McGinn's goal, it's like, ultimately it's not a problem. It's just, and this is, you know, this has been brought up, Lineker, I think, brought it up on a bigger platform, basically saying the crowd needs to know what's happening. Because they're in the dark, and I'm surprised. Because when we've seen it in the World Cup, where it's been on the big screens.
Mm.
Well, and we knew that the ref it had been referred, and the ref walks over to the touchline, and he's clearly having a look at something, and it's kind of like, oh,
yeah.
Okay,
and it was a surprise when
on.
It started in the Premier League, because we got none of how we'd seen VAR trialed. It was like, oh well, we're going to take it down a notch and not tell anybody. But that's backfired.
Well, it's typically British, wasn't it? Typically British. Ah, we'll just half-ass it.
Right, anyway, then we finally got the goal, and you thought, well, you know, it's not going to cost us this game because we're well in command. El Ghazi, good, smart finish. And you're thinking happy days, because I didn't think Burnley really offered that much at that stage.
I'm going to just say, I thought the first half, they were much better in the second.
I mean, there was free kicks bouncing off woodwork, but...
That was a warning sign. I thought there was, in the opening maybe 15 or 20 minutes, they had two balls into the box that we didn't deal with. One that was headed on, and also one that flashed right across the face of the goal. So the warning signs were there, but...
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
We were in control of that game, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, we mentioned McGinn there, and Miss Smith alluded after the game that he'd been kicked around the park pretty much through the game. Normally it's Grealish that we're calling out the opposition. But yeah, that's how they've survived in this league, isn't it? We can't just cry about it.
You'd classic, they were an old-fashioned English team.
I didn't enjoy the time wasting.
No, that was consistent. But I think they had their game plan, especially in the second half, and they stuck to it, and they executed it really well.
Does Villa Park use Burnley ball boys by any chance?
We need a multi-ball system.
Yeah, but anyway, let's get on to the Wesley incident.
So it's weird, because on the plan that I can see, it's referred to as the Wesley Pussy incident.
Well, I've already called him worse on this podcast.
If we're going to go full disclosure... It's
he's turned into like the scapegoat. Well, personally, I've defended him as a player. It's just we weren't playing in a way to involve him. But one thing that's rattled me, and it rattled me a couple of podcasts ago, was here's a guy, and I heard the stats. I saw it online that you know, the new FIFA game has come out, FIFA 20, and he is listed as the second, because you get a stat for strength, don't you? And he's listed as the second strongest player in the whole game. The second strongest.
That's got to be after Akinfenwa.
Probably. So let's park that there. And then you're looking, I mean, we've already seen him diving or whatever, but this one took a new level, because basically, if you haven't seen it, somebody's volleyed the ball, point blank range, it's hit him in the head, but it's not like he's out, sparked out, and he drops. Within a second, he's holding onto his face, then he falls to the ground.
The theatre and the drama.
And then he's lying on his back.
It was a bit of a WWE Undertaker-style death, wasn't it?
You can see him still breathing, so he's not dead. You know, his torso's going up and down, he's breathing. But he's making out he's dead. He's not moving, he's closed his eyes, he's out.
This is ridiculous.
It's just weird,
isn't
it?
I've watched
it back. Weird.
And,
have you really? Oh, Christ.
Players are going up to him, see if he's all right, and he's playing dead. Literally playing dead. Meanwhile, on Twitter, the Birmingham Mail chap...
They were already writing the obituary, weren't they?
Writing the obituary. He's tweeted out, he's unconscious, Wesley's unconscious. It's like, well, he's not unconscious because I've seen him clutch his head as the ball hit him in the face, as he does normally as soon as somebody touches him with a feather. And, you know, players have...
One of the lesser known and used fouls of the game is the feather.
But you know, when players get hit in the bollocks on free kicks and you see them wincing around in pain. No, I've got a new trick for this one. I'm just going to play dead. And by the way, the rules are, if you're unconscious, you're out of the game. That's it. It's goodbye.
God, he's on our team as well. It's cringe.
I think that came in 2014, if it wasn't in already before that. So if, according to the Birmingham Mail, he is unconscious, that's Wesley off the pitch. But his teammates are coming up to him, and then they're like, is he dead? So they put him in a recovery position. At that stage, I'm thinking, oh, okay, he's...
I forgot about that.
At that stage...
At that stage, the Birmingham Mailer are just about to publish the obituary. They're fucking winding up the 20-page Brazilian star.
Clickbait motors whirring away in the background.
It's gone into warp speed.
Quick, let's second Greg Evans back. Wake up, Kendrick.
So at that stage, when his teammates put him in the recovery position, I'm thinking, oh, okay, he's probably swallowed his tongue. I understand now why. You know, he got hit suddenly out of nowhere. The ball hits you in the face. Potentially, he could swallow his tongue. But if he had swallowed his tongue, the first thing I was thinking, why is he, if he's lying on his back, why isn't anybody trying to save him? He's dying, for God's sake. Nobody was doing the whole, because the first thing I thought was, don't you do the old tongue test? You know, somebody put your hand in his mouth and, you know, make sure his tongue's not down the back of his.
I wonder what you were suggesting.
Someone get him a Villa dog.
That'd open anyone's airway.
Villa dog up his ass just to get him back in the game.
That's a sufficient test. How to go back in
his. Is he unconscious? Put that up his ass. See what happens.
It'll be coming straight back out in about 5 minutes anyway.
I've never seen anything like so at that stage. I'm thinking, right, I'm drawing the line here. Now you're the boy that's cried wolf. So if you get knocked out or hit, I'm just going to leave you on. I mean, not as if, you know, if I went on the pitch to try to save his life, I would get done for a pitch encroachment. But
he was back on his feet before you got to him. Oh, shit.
But no, it's ridiculous. Jordan Crawley, one of the My Old Man Said Facebook supporters, said, do we think that Wesley is carrying too much muscle as he doesn't seem to have any turn of pace at all? And even when he gets motoring, he doesn't seem to pick up speed.
It just looks like he's running. He's moving his arms.
He's normally lying on his fucking back playing dead. But I remember seeing like clips of him, you know, when we were doing the whole YouTube search when we were signing him. And
you know as well as I do that those goals were him scoring against Callum.
Well, yeah, but there was some where he's put through and he powered through. It was almost like if he's playing on the shoulder, and if he's through, nobody's going to out-muscle him. And when you saw him, you thought, this is the return of Alan McAnally. This is Rambo 2.
McAnally had intent, though.
Yeah, this is it. I don't think he has intent because he's too busy, you know, trying to win a cheap foul here and there.
Mm.
I don't know quite what his motivation is, whether it's he cut a very frustrated figure.
There was one in the first half as well where he was out wide and he made out that he'd had his head elbowed off. By, and that was another lying on the floor, my eyeballs fell out type job. I think it's just
a very desperate attempt to get into the game.
Well, it erodes any. I mean, the refs must just think.
The Burnley men, the forward men, and you know, even when Jay Rodriguez came on, they're more kind of old school forwards, aren't they? They just get on with it. They're looking for any opportunity.
They had three battering rams. They had three absolute battering rams. I mean, Mings and Engels are not. They can handle themselves. They got pushed from pillar to post, and then as soon as you had Barnes up against Gilbert. I mean, that was only going to end one way when the ball went in the air.
We looked very light all of a sudden, didn't we? That brings us to Burnley's goals, I think.
Before we get on to that, I just want to say that's what I expect from Wesley. I expect him to put himself about. And I'm just thinking, you know, Wesley, if he plays how he's built, then a lot of defenders are going to have bad days against him. But he doesn't go down that path.
Doesn't play to his strengths, does he? He's too busy fanning around with his feigning injury.
Tarkowski just dominated him, which is strange actually, because Villa, you know, as we said, you know, Burnley had three battering rams up front who dominated in the air, but for the most part, Burnley just bypassed midfield completely. It was back to front every time. Whereas actually, when we got the ball on the floor, we absolutely, you know, Westwood was kind of out of the game for most of it, and I actually thought Grealish, Target, and McGinn just picked Loughton and went, right, we've got you in our back pocket. And every time they got at him, you know, Loughton always used to be quite good going forward. And he sort of showed willing again. But in terms of defensively, he was a sitting duck.
Mm.
But we just didn't, second half, we didn't exploit it at all, did we? And when we did, we made things happen every time. It was very frustrating. It was actually a very simple equation for Villa. If we kept the ball on the floor, we'd have won that game. But we were sort of reduced to, let's just hoist it up to bloody Wesley. And
you know, we know how Burnley got their goals, basically balls in. We're in the situation where you know, Rodriguez was up against Taylor and out jumped him because
dreadful defending.
Well, and Smith said, you know, obviously before the game, we were obviously talking about cutting off supply lines and not letting them and cross it because that's their game. So that led me to think, well, here's an interesting situation where for the first game of the season, this is the first time this season, you haven't actually played two wide players who would naturally track back to try to help cut off their delivery. So I couldn't see his science there. He knew the threat. You had to cut off the supply lines for Wood and Barnes and then obviously Rodriguez when he came on. But he didn't set up to do that, which, well, you've identified something, but the science of your selection doesn't seem to counter that.
It was a bit of deja vu for me. And this, what I think has been fairly levelled at us, and as is increasingly the case, is we're not learning the error of our ways. What happened again for me was exactly the same as, and you could just have changed the name of the team we were facing. I thought at 60, 70 minutes, two or three players, key players, had run out of gas or had drifted out of the game. I thought McGinn, though he scored late on, I thought his race was again running about 70 minutes. Hourihan disappeared, was very anonymous, and it left Nakamba doing a lot of the tidying up. When we talk about the two goals, I think that the ball that neither Gilbert and El Ghazi managed to stop coming is a travesty. There's two of them are there, and it's the most weak attempt to stop a cross coming in. You'll see. At all, and the freedom that I mean, both of the headed goals, you just have to ask, well, what, completely unchallenged. Yeah. You know, the ease at which, you know, at the beginning of the season we were going, our defence looks solid, that we, you know, we're impenetrable, but it's not clicking up front. We actually scored two really good goals, but defensively we gifted. Burnley didn't have to work terribly hard for those goals.
No, I mean, yeah,
and that's a big worry for me.
I mean, another thing, and this is obviously with a bit of hindsight. It's a selection issue. Obviously, Target came in,
played
which
very
is
well.
Fair enough. But then you're thinking, and when I say it's a hindsight thing, because this may have, let's say, it may have nullified the last goal that Burnley scored. Why have you got Taylor on the bench when you could have Courtney House? Because Courtney House obviously covers two positions. If Taylor starts, fair enough, you're considering him your top left back. But if he's on the bench, then Courtney House can play left back if he's coming on as a sub, but he also can play, obviously, centre back. But he also has a bit more physicality. And you're playing a team that's obviously, you know, they've got big men up front. So you would think, well, if you had to choose either or, and you've already selected Target as your main man, you'd have Courtney Horse on the bench. You know, we're obviously talking with hindsight now, but it would have obviously played out because Target would have got injured, come off, and then Courtney Horse, and then we'd have that more physical backline to take on their three big men.
More rounded footballer, isn't
he? Yeah, so
he,
that was another decision I couldn't quite understand. If Taylor's your main man, I understand if he's in the first 11, but if he's on the bench, and obviously these players are fighting to be on the bench now, the squad players, then I thought Courtney House, who'd obviously come on in a playoff final, so, you know, he can handle it, would be your choice just because he offers more on the bench. So didn't quite get that. Jonathan Kulf, another My Old Man Said patron, he asks, I just wanted to get your view on the possibility of using House at left back if Target's injury is going to sideline him for a few weeks, hoping the injury won't keep him out, as thought he was very good Saturday, but surely he can do a better job than Taylor. Against both West Brom and Derby in particular at Villa Park last season, he played very well at left back.
Yes.
Yeah, I don't think Smith's going to do it, because if he's got him on the if Taylor's on the bench above him in this game against Burnley, it's hard to see him leapfrogging him. But we shall see.
I mean, I've said before numerous times, I like Courtney Hawes. I don't know if necessarily he's the first name on the team sheet as a starter, but as you've said, I think he brings a lot to your squad. He's a really good player to have. I think he's a good athlete. I think he offers probably more going forward than Taylor, because he's just quicker across the ground.
Physical presence, you know, it's horses for courses.
I give Taylor fair credit that he actually has started the season reasonably well, but we can't stand on like sentimentality, and I hold so little sentimentality towards the guy. It's unreal. It's kind of like if you know, we've got a big enough squad that if you have a bad game and make stupid mistakes and don't learn from them, sorry, but you're playing in the under-23s next week.
Well, at this level, you talk about being sentimental, and it is exactly that. That I don't really particularly dislike Taylor. I just think that he's limited. He's, as I've often said, he's about a 6 out of 10 in his position at left back, and he's a 0 out of 10 going forward. At least with Howes, I think that you've got, you know, and as we saw with Target, that you've got someone who can get forward and give you an option, and who has more. I don't know, more of a modern footballer about him. And I think we've got to start adapting how we approach different teams as well. That Burnley aren't, aren't the best footballing team, but they came with a plan and they executed it. And I have to say that I think, you know, there's a lot of talk about how competitive we've been, yada, yada, yada. Well, not competitive enough to be winning games that we should have won.
I just think we're not streetwise at all. That's our downfall is between our ears. It's nothing
to do
with
competitiveness. And the killer stat where we're only 1 point better off them in the season we got relegated. If you look at all of those games, I think I mentioned this at the top, we only got beat by one goal in those first seven games in any of the games we lost. So we were technically competitive in that season. It's just once players become disillusioned because they're not winning games, that's where the kind of rot sets in. I mean, what I will say about Dean Smith is one of the things that Brentford fans and Warsaw fans flagged before we got him is he does go through these, you know, fallow periods of results where he'll go a long period of results without getting wins.
Yep.
So you're thinking, at least, if you're looking for a silver lining, he's managed to get teams out of those poor runs.
Yeah.
And he did that last season with Villa because we were on the road to nowhere. It suddenly banged 10-game winning streak.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to dwell too much on this. I think the one worrying thing about those two trends is that when he's gone on fallow periods, that they're 15 games in length. And that's not something in the Premier League that, there's not that margin of 40 plus games. And I do think that we've got to act quicker because the changes that can be affected are obvious now. You know, it's about changing key personnel in game for me. I think he's got a big problem that he's stuck with until January with the striking situation.
Yeah, it's a massive
problem. I don't think you can necessarily level that at Smith. It is a massive problem, and I think it's one that we
unfortunately predicted.
Because
if any player in that team needs competition to basically put a fire up his ass or a Villa dog, it is Wesley.
Well, someone said to me that I think as soon as Codger's fit, I think we're going to see him.
Well, just quickly, Mark Hansen has a point about Mom's patron. He says, do you think we're struggling with the physical side of this league as we don't seem to be getting much protection from referees, although Wesley and his piss poor presence at being knocked out does not help at all?
No is my answer to that. It's not necessarily the physicality, maybe in terms of fitness, and actually, you know, as I said last week, you know, we're having to work very hard in games because we don't control the ball. But the main thing for me is between our ears, our sort of football intelligence is just stupidity at the moment. Now, we've lost games because of ineptitude, not because of lack of ability or because we've been played off the park.
And to evidence your point,
we don't play smart football.
Grealish is one that he smashes over from 18 yards. Trezeguet has the freedom of Villa Park to his right, and our marquee player has to be picking him out.
Yeah, I mean, I you know, when you see that in the ground, it kind of goes past you, and then I saw the replay of it afterwards, and
dreadful.
The more you see it, it's really bad. And it's where you compare Grealish to his peers and where they're at the moment in terms of the England team. You know, you look at, say, Barkley in that position, Mason Mount, what's his name, Madison is probably the main one at Leicester. Those guys in that position, I would say, especially Madison, the way he's played this season, if he gets in and around the box, he's at least hitting the target. You know, if the keeper makes a great save, fair enough. You've been greedy, but you've made the keeper work. But if you're going to take it on, you've got to hit the target from that kind of range. You can't balloon it over when there's an easy pass on.
More evidence to what Chris has just said about intelligence. Dean Smith said, because a lot of people were saying we were blowing out of our ass and it was a fitness issue against Arsenal, that's why we faded. As Dean Smith said after the game, you know, the running stats were right up there and they, you know, they never dropped off. So that isn't the point. It is, as Chris said, it's more about game management and being more clinical. And more clinical doesn't necessarily mean Grealish having a shot in that position. It means laying it off. So
And sometimes running stats can be interpreted one or two ways, can't they? You can say, well, yeah, you're putting a shift in, that's brilliant, you're working very hard, but you know, you look at the top sides and the ball does the work. Because if you keep the ball moving, you allow yourself to be economical when you want to just take a little bit of the pace out of the game and go, do you know what, we'll pick our moment when to go here, and then and then you can sort of hit the afterburner when you get into the position, you've worked the opportunity. But I just think we're constantly working so hard to either win the ball back or play this very sort of blood and thunder game, which is great to watch with the likes of Begin and Grealish sort of picking the ball up, trying to take people on and make things happen. But a little bit more sort of just composure when you get into key areas.
Very quickly, did you have any problems with packing in McGinn, Horahan, Grealish on top of having a defensive midfielder in Nakamba? I mean, is it a is it a case of sacrificing balance to get the personnel in there? I mean, we used to see this with England when they tried to shoehorn Gerrard, Lampard, Scholes and Beckham all obviously into one team. So they were...
I think not, but it does depend on the opposition. Because of the way Burnley played, we had the extra man in midfield. So we were playing a four, but with whenever we had the ball, it actually became a five because either Target would go or Gilbert would go. Grealish will drift around. So you're actually
Smith said Grealish was playing further up this time.
Yeah,
he was basically in a number 10. So it wasn't like a flat four, as it were. It was kind of almost like a diamond shape. And then the two fullbacks would bomb on. I prefer it. It's a more fluid system. Whether or not that will need to be interchangeable, you know, when you're playing the likes of City or Liverpool, would I drop Hourihane and play someone like a Luiz or a more defensive midfielder?
Well, you might opt to just drop in Juanca, both a Nakamba and a Luiz, don't you, perhaps? I thought Nakamba, we haven't really mentioned, I thought he did have a very, very good game against Burnley.
Yeah, he's very much growing into his role, isn't he? You can see he knows his role. He's much more... He just has the look of a player who's played at a high standard already.
Yeah, looks good. Looks very promising.
There were lots of positives to take from the game, but the unfortunate sort of thing that I take away when I'd rather not is... It's the same shit that we're moaning about every week. And that's becoming a bit of a broken record. And week on week, it's becoming more frustrating because the press say it, we say it, everyone's saying it. You're not learning.
Players or the manager?
Dare I say both? I'd say it's more the players, but the manager has to take a little bit of it because it's up to him to change it. If they're not learning, pull them out, put someone in who will.
We've already in this episode alone scratched ahead where Smith has said one thing and then his actions suggest something else and they don't quite add up, but we shall see.
There's a couple of delusions that have crept in.
Well, you know, he's learning the league as well and he has to be smarter because Dyche was proactive at halftime. He said, this isn't working. I'm going to go three up front, and it worked. And the guy comes off the bench, scores the goal. The three lads up front absolutely battered the back four. For 45 minutes, and you know, were they good value to get some out of the game? Probably, yeah, to be fair, on our second half performance.
Well, we only had three shots on target, as did Burnley, and but we were obviously the home team forcing the issue, so we didn't really have that much quality in terms of efforts. But that's been part of the cause in most of the games so far. We'll create chances, but it's not like we're not peppering, are we?
Well, we had a few corners as well, or a few set pieces in this game, and there was room for improvement there in a couple of times.
Decisions trying to be a bit clever still on those corners.
It's not our forte, cleverness, I don't think, and we've mentioned it a couple of times. And there's nothing I hate more than if at a crucial pivotal moment where the ball needs to be delivered in, one of two things we seem to do. We opt for a stupid, poorly executed short corner, or we hit the first man. I mean, I'm all for creativity, but yeah, we don't need to overanalyze that.
Next up is obviously Norwich and Brighton. I think Norwich game's going to be interesting, and I think that's where we'll find out a lot about Nakamba. We just mentioned him, but we have problems against Norwich. They beat us every game at Carrow Road in the Championship, in the three times we played them. Do we just take them on, go toe-to-toe, see who comes out, or do we play some kind of defensive game and try to catch them on the counter and do the traditional away kind of approach to things? Or do we try to dominate? And as
we
I
go
said,
and play
go
our game, whatever that is at the moment.
I think that they've conceded a few more goals than us, if I'm right in saying. I think we have to get at them, and I think that our approach needs to be positive. I think we've got to tighten up at the back and learn from the errors of our ways, and I do think we'll be all right. It is a game for me that we've got to be going away to places like Norwich and trying to win.
That's what Manchester City said.
we've just got to go and do it. I think that we're a long way away from being a Manchester City, but I think that if we've got aspirations to stay in this division, we've got to claw above the teams who, for me, they look like two teams in the league who are going to be drawn away in Watford and Newcastle, judging by Newcastle's defeat at Leicester. And I think that inevitably there's going to, we need to get ourselves into that fourth, fifth, sixth from bottom and start clawing our way up the division.
Yeah, because obviously Newcastle and Watford have been in games where they've basically ship goals. Yeah. I mean, we haven't been battered. We've lost games that we were in positions to win, or at least in Bournemouth when we committed suicide in the first opening minutes. We could have, with a bit more urgency, maybe have clawed a draw out of
that. And that is the positive to be taken, that the margins have been fine. But and that's the, to take Chris's, that's the frustration really, that the errors are glaring and you think that they're rectifiable.
Yeah.
But for me, that's the reason why, yeah, it's not an easy place to go, and our history is not fantastic at Carrow Road in recently, at least.
But the news flash is Norwich and Brighton are the two teams immediately above us. So that's a good point. Good place to start winning.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Brighton, after the international break, really needs to be where they put a bit of a marker down, you know, show that they've actually done something productive in the international break, because it is the break comes potentially at a good time for Villa, but they have to make use of that time to really just iron out, you know, a few of the players are going to go off in internationals, but they are going to need to do a lot of work.
I mean, we'll be fresh from Bahrain as well, so
feel
good.
Nicely tanned.
Mm.
Right then, is it time for a Scott Hogan touch count challenge?
Oh, I'd forgotten about this.
Fuck yeah, it is.
Fantastic.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. It is the Scott Hogan touch count challenge, sponsored by Bahrain. Right, Stoke, the mighty Stoke, who are languishing again at the bottom of the table now. Stoke played Nottingham Forest and unfortunately got beat 3-2. Well, unfortunate if you're a Stoke fan. I mean, I have a soft spot for Forest, so I wasn't too bothered about seeing them go top of the league temporarily. Unfortunately, Scott Hogan, not even on the bench.
Wow.
Now, this is the thing I was thinking, oh, maybe he went off against Crawley in the cup game injured, but he wasn't, because Nathan Collins got sent off. Sorry, this is the Crawley Stoke League Cup.
Which they also lost, am I right in saying?
Yes, they got beat 5-3 on penalties after drawing 1-1, but they went down to 10 men after Nathan Collins got sent off on the 62nd minute. So Hogan had to make way. You know, normally you take one of your strikers off. That's a position that I don't think Dean Smith would have done. I think you're playing Crawley, say lower echelons, certainly below Stoke, you go two up top, three in midfield, and you have a go. I think that's what Dean Smith would have been doing if he went into that situation. I think the Stoke manager thought, well, shit, we're down to 10 men. Really, that's 9 men, because we've also got Hogan on the pitch. we better get back to 10 men by subbing off Hogan.
Bringing on someone with a pulse.
So, Scott Hogan, 62 minutes of action.
Wow.
Who's going first?
I'll take the lead on this one.
62 minutes of action. One shot he gets in there. How many touches?
15.
15 from Mr. 12.
Ah, the old if in doubt, think less. Yeah, it's probably a safe route, really.
Right. Second round of guesses, Mr. Bird.
13.
Mm. I'm going to go 11.
Well, we're going into the third and final round, and I have to tell you, well, I'm going to give you a clue. We haven't actually formulated a proper rule here, but none of you are within 5 touches of what he had.
Okay. God, was he that bad? Fucking hell.
Oh, this is a real quandary, this is. Did he have a...
did he have an anomaly and actually get a kick that game, or was he as shit as usual? That is the question.
It is.
I'm gonna give him the benefit of the doubt here. I'm gonna go.
Wow.
I'm gonna say 20 touches.
Ooh.
Dan probably knows better than me, and he'll go with single figures.
So obviously, I gave you the clue.
60 minutes. Surely he didn't have less than 10 touches in 60 minutes. Surely 5.
Chris Bird went the right way.
It's a conspiracy.
25.
The ball surely just bounced off him 24 times.
What was he
25. Like, I think that's a
Pete. That's got to be a record.
That's a personal best.
What was he doing?
That's a personal best. Oh, he played in goal.
That's
his new position. I forgot to mention that.
He's the sweeper keeper.
I don't believe it.
25 touches. That's about as many touches as he had in the whole of last season, isn't it?
Pretty
much. 25 touches
and only one shot, though, in 25 touches. That is shocking.
Right. Next round. This could be the deciding round if the Budmeister cranks into this. We're going to go back to that Stoke 2 Forest 3 game. And obviously, former Villa man came on loan at the end of the second season we're in the Championship. Mr. Luis Garabon scored the third goal, which ultimately gave them the win in the 3-2 win.
Well.
So he played the whole game. And Rodgers is going first on this one. How many touches did he have in 90 minutes?
27.
First guess, Mr. Bird.
30.
Was that a gas from the Rodgers?
It's make or break. This
is
crunch
serious time. So, second guess, Mr. Rodgers.
23.
Mr. Bird.
32.
Right. Going into the next
hard work,
and the final deciding round, I'm going to tell you that both of you are within 5.
Ooh.
Dan Rogers up to the hockey.
29.
Mr. Bird.
What did I say? I said 20, 28 and 31.
No, you said 30 and 32.
Okay. 34.
Oh, no.
Oh, I was tempted to give you another clue. And the clue would have been, if you were writing down these predictions, you might have got it. But the clue was you'd have to nail it bang on to have any chance of winning this round because Rogers had it cordoned off. It was 28, so he had 27 and 29.
1-1. Just like the Villa, isn't it?
Fucking Rodriguez, like I'm nodding it in past you, Heaton, you old bastard.
It's just another stupid bit of comedy defending,
right,
isn't it?
So really, we're going to go to a game, the last game. That
you're Philippe Senderos in this.
It's just fucking Route 1 Rogers, isn't it, with his lumping
Route
it up.
One fucking damn matter, man.
Anti-football bollocks.
Right.
This is going to go in off Grant Holt's cock. Come on.
Oh, fuck this. I'm throwing myself to the ground. Oh, that's it. I'm playing the Wesley role now. I'm
dead.
Going down. I'm playing dead.
Can you just move his tongue around and put him into the recovery position?
Hang on. Let me get one of my frozen Villa dogs to stoke him back into life.
Hello and welcome to the final heat and the end of a long intellectual trail for our two finalists.
All right, we're going to go to the last game that was played in the English Football League before we recorded this podcast. That was Leicester thumping our relegation rivals Newcastle and their illustrious leader 5-0.
Bruce Ball.
So, but up first, and the question is, how many touches did Jamie Vardy get? Scorer of two goals in the game.
Two goals.
He had four shots as well. There's another clue.
26.
26 from Mr. Bud.
18.
Rogers, 18. Second round.
30.
30. Now it's Mr. Rogers.
22.
Bang on.
Oh, my God. I'm sliding on my knees, Grant Holt. It's been, enough the
from
bollock.
From the death.
I'm calling VAR on that one.
Oh, we need
not letting you fucking celebrate this.
Oh.
Make him sweat.
I'll tell you what VAR would be, what it would constitute of. It would be a secret camera in each of your rooms where you record this to see if you're not checking statistics.
That's actually a good. Why did I not think of that?
I would need to review footage of seeing what your internet activity has been the last.
You don't want to know.
1 minute.
Yeah, it's not information I'm willing to give up, to be honest.
There's a man, Vardy, who 22 touches and he can change a game, score two goals.
Who surpassed Cristiano Ronaldo's goal scoring?
He actually
record.
Had less touches than Scott Hogan did against Crawley. Right, so anyway, Mr. Rogers back off his drought. I can't remember how many months it's been since you've won a Scott Hogan.
No, I think I've been whipping Bud for weeks now.
I can't remember.
I mean, I'm just going to reiterate what I said as I was walking out the Villa on Saturday, really. That's fuck off.
Oh, so gracious in defeat.
If you're playing this game when you're just walking the dogs or something, I think you're missing out. You need somebody else to compete.
This is the kind
against,
of game
so
you
think.
Play at about 7 o'clock on Christmas Day when you're smashed with a family and you've all been arguing all day.
Christmas Day, Scott Hogan touch count special.
Box set.
Box set. Yeah, break it out on Boxing Day. While you're eating the turkey sandwiches. Right, anyway, a great comeback from Mr. Rogers. Maybe it's time to get Stokes back on to take on Rogers, the current champion.
Yeah, Stokes normally gets his ass handed to him by me, though, doesn't he? So.
Well, that's it. Now his bogeyman's out of the picture and the current champion of the Scott Hogan touch count is Mr. Rogers. That's how we're going to do this long term. It's winner stays on, basically.
Nice knowing you, bud. See you, mate. Bye.
I'm just going to enjoy my night's sleep, though, Dan, because you've got to be up at 6 o'clock and you're going to be recording this till 2 in the morning. So
he speaks the truth.
Sunday nights in bed by 10. Sunday nights in bed by 10.
Right. So anyway, thank you very much for listening. As always, please do spread the word. Follow, obviously, on Spotify. Subscribe on Apple and whatever other podcast, I was going to say furniture you listen to, but apps that you listen to. You can also join.
Subscribe in your bureau.
You can also.
I'm just on my Lilo.
You can also join the Madfew.
On the chaise lawn.
You can also join the Madfew Facebook group where we have discussions throughout the week. And please do become a My Old Man Said patron and help support the show. We need to get those numbers up to compete with the likes of these Spurs and Arsenal podcasts, etc. Go to myoldmansaid.com and click on the Patreon menu option for more details. And that way you can access the great show that we call the Anti-Preview, which is us cutting loose a bit more because it's not going out in the public domain. We could probably get away and not get sued as much. So
speak for yourself.
Right. Anyway, let's get out of here and come back in to record this Anti-Preview show. Until next time, it's goodbye from me and it's goodbye from them.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
My old man said.
Right. Bonus points. Old Brighton came on the 57th minute. How many touches? One stab. He's played 33 minutes. Old Brighton, how many touches in 33 minutes?
Nine.
12.
44.
Fucking
fair play.
Why
man.
Did we get rid of him? Why? Why?
Can we just give him
giant
like...
No, it's ginormous nose. Huge.
Can we give him El Ghazi?
Swap him for El Ghazi.
He'll come home, won't he? He'll want to come home.
Yeah, when he runs like Robert Pires, that's when he'll come home. That's the way it goes.
Oh, yes.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.